Well, you may have heard recently, and probably for the last few years, this whole thing called the Stage 3 tax cuts. Now, just recently, the Albanese government has come out and announced that they will repeal and tweak the proposed tax cuts that were going to be effective 1 July 2024. We're going to talk about that and what it means for most of us income earners. We can't do today's episode without Sphere Home Loans. Over 70% of Aussies now use a mortgage broker, which says a few things. They're good at what they do, it suits people's needs, and they're getting a good deal. Which, it's funny, John, like, it used to be like 55%. So the mortgage broker really has increased. And I think it's good to know that the banks are really getting behind this distribution method.
Yeah, I think they've sort of joined forces now. It used to be banks very, standoffish against mortgage brokers, wasn't it? But now, like growing up, it was just bank. We were loyal to our bank manager, and well, my parents were anyway. Mm. But yeah, the tide's definitely turned, and
yeah,
you just no-brainer for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go, Sphere Home Loans. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast. If you're after a new mortgage, your first home, you want to refinance, get an investment property, you can search Sphere Home Loans. They'll help you wherever you are in Australia. My name's Glenn James, joined by John Pidgeon from the Property Podcast. And for the very first time, this is Money.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, so I just want to date stamp this episode. We're actually recording it on the 31st of January, which is Wednesday. This goes up on the following Tuesday, the 6th. Right now, as recording this, these proposed tax cuts and the changes, they have just been announced. They're not legislated. The coalition government will need to support these changes to get it through. If not, the crossbench will need to be involved, and there could be some strings attached. So it might not change. It might not be exactly what we're going to talk about here, but effectively we'll talk about it anyway. So the long and the short was the Stage 3 tax cuts was going to remove one bracket, one big tax bracket. So basically most income earners would be taxed at 30%. What that really meant was because there was a removal of one, I guess, stage in the tax rate, people earning over $180,000 would save $9,000 a year, which is huge. Basically, from $45,000 of earnings to $200,000, you would only pay 30% tax.
Yeah, and then it jumps to 45 or proposed to jump to 45.
So, yeah, at 200 grand, yeah. So, I mean, so that would, you know, mean that someone earning, you know, over 200 grand would basically pay 9 grand less of tax.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I mean. Like, it, you know, I'm in this category and I thought that was a bit rich. But
yeah.
That's the socialist capitalist in me. Like, come on, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are probably outraged. But when almost, it was like around 50, 55% of government revenue comes from income tax, that's a big problem. And it's a structural problem that needs to change.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be more of a problem for the government than everyone else if they did make that change. And I think, a lot of people around 200K were licking their lips, weren't they? But it was for the middle income earners, which is what, 80 to 150,
quote unquote, most people.
Yeah, that their life wasn't changing significantly, and that's probably what the government realised.
Yeah, and so the whole, and I don't care who anyone votes for, that the facts are the Albanese government all through the pre-election, the election, yeah, will not change the tax proposed tax cuts because they're legislated to start from 1st of July 2024. They've come back and go, oh, actually, you know what? We're actually changing it now. So the opposition or the coalition now are probably going to be like, oh, you're breaking promises and all that. I think, you know, politics, it's wild and something needed to be done, I think. And I'm just saddened that I don't think in Australia we'll ever get wholesale tax reform. And right. I've said it on this podcast for a long time. Like, we've got to move from income tax being the main source of government revenue.
Yeah.
Like, don't muzzle an ox, as the old proverb said. Like, let us just work. Can we look at taxing spending? I don't know. But either way, with an aging population and, you know, a heap of boomers are retiring and will stop work soon.
Mm.
Like, there's a whole, like, and the NDIS is awesome. That needs to be funded. All the defence stuff, that needs to be funded. Like, there is a big problem in Australia. Aged care will need to be funded. Where is the money coming from? I'm not an economist. I know enough to be dangerous. But if the main source of government income is from people working, and with an aging population and people stop working, two things are going to happen. We're going to turn off government benefits, which people get outraged when, you know, you take money from them. Or two, we're going to tax the working class more.
Yeah. And there's,
or three, we've got to get the money from somewhere else.
There's been talk probably in the last 10 years that the pension might not be around when I get there or you get there and next generation gets there. So that is absolutely a concern.
Mm.
I suppose it just rings home to say, well, what are we doing now to set ourselves up so we don't have to rely on the government? We pay our taxes along the way. And at the end of the day, whether we save $1,000 or $9,000 from these tax cuts, it's what we're doing as a household to ensure that we take advantage of that. Because for a lot of uneducated, ill-disciplined, that money, those savings, is just going to be absorbed into life.
Yeah, but that's good to say. But if you're earning 60 grand a year and from 1 July you save $100 in tax, where old mate earning 200 grand saving 9,000, that also is a bit rich.
I agree. Yeah. Like it needed to alter. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, those that are, and probably preaching to the converted, those that are listening in right now are going to be, okay, I'm going to put this aside and put it to good use. Others will kick it down the
So road. Basically, the long and the short of it is, from the 1st of July, the Albanese government want to do the following. And that's why I just wanted to stress this might change once politics get involved. The proposal from the Albanese government is from 0 to 18,200 still remains tax-free. From, we'll call it 18,200 to 45,000, 16% tax as opposed to 19%. So there's a tax reduction there. From 45 to 135,000, it's a 30% tax rate. Now that's instead of between 45 and 120 at 32.5%. From 135 to 190, it'll be 37% tax rate. And then instead of from $180,000, 45%, it'll be from $190,000, you'll pay 45 cents in the dollar or 45% tax. Now, effectively what that means is, a person earning 40 grand will get a tax cut of $654. A person earning $100,000 will get a tax cut of $2,179, which is $804 more than what you would have got under the stage three tax cuts. And a person earning $200,000 will still get a tax cut of $4,529, which is almost half the around the $9,000 that was going to happen. So, look, I think it had to be done. Something had to happen. But my comments are there has to be a broader discussion around tax.
Yeah.
Do we increase the GST, which is a political landmine, which probably never happened, increase the GST, reduce income tax, increase Social Security tax-free threshold? I don't know. I'm not an economist, but watch this space. The proposed stage three tax cuts will likely change. We know that because there is now political will. The Albanese government is like, no, we are changing this. We will fall on our sword, which is fine. And if things change, things change. I get that. The only other interesting thing, John, is economists predicted that, you know, in the coming year there might be two interest rate drops. They're saying this proposed tax cut might mean that there'll only be one interest rate drop because the economy will be lubricated a little bit more with people having more money to spend, as opposed to lubricating the economy with an interest rate decrease.
Yeah. So all in all, majority of the country is paying 30% tax, really.
And that's what the government or Treasury want. They want the majority of income earners to be paying 30 cents in the dollar.
So 45 to 135. You're on 30%, and obviously all companies are paying 30% as well, so small businesses as well, which is, I think it's a good outcome.
Yeah, yeah.
Personally.
Yeah, awesome. Well, there we have it. Tax, am I right? Okay, there's a question. Cassie actually wrote in to Instagram, and I happen to see it. I don't always see the Instagram inbox. Hi there. Do you have an episode on your podcast about superannuation as a sole trader? If so, what's it called so I can find it? Love your podcast, by the way, new listener here. Well, we don't, Cassie. Well, we may have in the past, but today we're going to talk about it. John, what's your thoughts on, and we'll just make it up, like someone could be 29 years old, they've worked for the last 9 years, and they're like, I want to start my own business. I'm a sole trader.
Yeah.
And you know, you might be doing some consulting or something like that, or I don't know. Like, what's your thoughts about this super thing as a sole trader, knowing that you only have to pay superannuation if you are an employee?
Yes.
So you don't have to pay super if you are a sole trader.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? And I think we've spoken about it a few times, Glenn, where as when you're starting your own business, you've got money that you're putting back into the business to grow the business, and super might get put to the side for the first year or so. Mm. Ideally, you want to continue to be contributing to super regardless of your entity, whether you're a sole trader, company, individual, etc. So my ideal world feeling on
John
this...
John did quotation marks in person, everyone.
Yes, is if you have the funds and the means, regardless of whether you're an employee, I would be contributing to super.
Mm. But if you set up your own company and you're an employee of your own company, you have to statutorily anyway.
Yes, that's right. But as a sole trader, you've got the option to.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So I'm saying you still should be doing it as a sole trader. Realistic, real world 2024 might not happen in the first year.
Yeah.
Because the funds aren't there and you're trying to, you can say, look, I can put 12% away to super, or I can put that money back into my business to grow it so I can eventually put more into super later on, kicking the can down the road. I personally, if I had that choice, I'd say, yeah, it'll be the latter. I would be putting money back into my business to build it. If I can do both, fantastic. You?
Yeah, I was just thinking I might make a bit of a controversial comment on this podcast, which might be a first time.
For this year.
For this year. When we talk about sole trader, you're effectively a small business, okay?
Yes.
Even if you're a contractor and it's a fixed contract to government or something like that, right? So we know that 75 to 80% of small businesses fail within the first 3 to 5 years, okay? So what I'm thinking is when you start your business, the priority is to get money in the door. Obviously, you need to eat, pay yourself, pay business expenses, and be standing for the next week to do it again.
Yes.
So when I started my first business, I did start as a sole trader. I wasn't paying any extra into super, didn't have to by law. And practically, do I want to put $500 into super this month or pay rent? Pretty simple equation.
Yep.
Rent needs to be paid. What I would probably hypothesize is, and this is the controversial comment, once you start your small business, if you are a sole trader, if you're not paying yourself super, and at the 1st of July this year, the SG rate is 11.5%, but we'll just call it 10% for loose, you know, bush maths. Within 3 to 4 years, I reckon if you're not paying 10% of your earnings that you're drawing out of the business into super, you need to. Secondly, if you're not because you don't have the money, you need to question whether you can do this business or not.
I don't think that's controversial. I think that is logic.
Mm.
Yeah, because at the 3-year stage, and everyone says 3 years. If it's not working, get out. But what if I'm enjoying it, right?
But there's still an opportunity cost.
Yeah, correct. But I would argue for most Australians, and this might be more controversial, that 11.5% you probably won't miss anyway at that stage.
No, and what I would say is set it up, even if it's a weekly payment, you know, do – if it's $5,000 divided by 52, you know, call it $100 a week. Just set $100 a week, transfer into your super fund by BPAY, and then you claim that on tax at the end of the year. Build it in from year three. Just do it automatically each week. Yeah. You don't have to wait. Just do that. Get it happening automatically. But the thing is, like when you said, John, like, oh, you might be enjoying it and all that – well, that's fine that you're doing your self-employed thing. You're enjoying it. You don't have enough money to pay yourself super. I mean, what are you doing? Like, you're losing out your trade of time into the workforce, the universe, the goods and services, where you could earn more money working for someone else, getting super and getting paid really well. And that's the opportunity cost that you are – potentially doing yourself or your family a disservice because you are worth more to just go out and work for someone than run your own business.
And financially, that's a logical statement, right? Lifestyle-wise, and some people come from the train of thought of, okay, I get to do what I want when I want, regardless of the money I earn. Yes, I could earn more money elsewhere. I could go to the mines or I could do whatever. I'm not contributing to super, but I'm doing everything I want right now. And some people make that decision. That's not financially the best outcome.
Yep. And there could be legitimate things like the business could be going really well and, oh, Glenn, I'm in my fourth year and my business is going really well. Oh, that 30 grand that I could have put into super or the 20 grand or the 10 grand that I could put into super, I'm going to buy another piece of equipment because you are still really in establishment stage. Like you're not in fresh startup. Like 3 to 4 years, you're getting to the fact that you're established. Sure, you might make the judgment call that I will invest into some equipment or back into the business. That's all well and good, but I don't want you to ever think that you're not above diversification in your financial life. And a lot of small businesses are like, oh, my business is my super. That's fine. What if your business is worth nothing when you retire? And I hypothesize, by even drip feeding a weekly amount into your super account, you won't miss it and you're taking money off the table. Now, if you're being self-employed for 8 years and you haven't really paid your super, you're a contractor, there's no real big investments that you need to make. And I'm talking capital investment, paying rent at the shop or paying ongoing P&L costs. That's not an investment. I'm talking equipment or like rent isn't equipment. So I'm saying if you have been more than 5 years, 4 years, 6 years, whatever that is, and you're not paying super as a self-employed person, you need to start because you need to get money off the table, out of the business, into another asset. And this is an interesting conversation that I hadn't even thought of, John, when I was reading this. We know that as a self-employed person, you've got the option, particularly when you're a contractor, whether I contribute super to my retail super fund and that gets invested. You might have a biggest passion to be a property owner. You could consciously say, I'm going to save up and buy an investment property because we're building retirement wealth and we're taking money off the table from our business and diversifying, whether that's in super or whether that's into an investment property.
So I think when we first started contributing as super as business owners, it actually sharpened our financial wealth across business and personal, because it really made us think, okay, we're paying ourselves a wage, this portion goes to super and this amount stays in the business. So it gave us some structure. I think previous to that, we were guilty of one big money pit and it's like, okay, which is personal, which is business, nothing's going to super, we should be doing that. Are we paying ourselves a wage? Is it a distribution? Like, it was just muddied waters there for a while. So that's another benefit of having that structure in place.
And that's another thing as well. Like, if you have been self-employed for 4 to 5 years or even 2 years or 1 year, like, you've got to set your banking structures up.
Yeah.
So the more money you get, the easier it is to manage. personal expenses, separate account than your business expenses.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I would say if you are self-employed and you are building a business, me personally, I'm always going to cap out the super because I'd rather pay 15% tax and park it for the long term than pay 30% outside of super. So from a tax planning and a wealth creation, capping out your super will always be better in terms of tax in the first instance, then go and do your property. That's yep. some unsolicited advice. Hey, Kayla asks, when calculating rental yield on an existing investment property, is it annual rental income divided by purchase price or divided by current value?
Very good, Kayla. Depends what answer you want. I think it's a really good exercise to do because if you've held property for some time, it's good to look back to see what the rental yield or the gross yield was when I first bought the property and now what the gross yield is as a result of the value increasing, hopefully, and the rental income increasing. So I think you can do both, but generally speaking, we're looking at gross yield before we buy the property. So if round numbers, if we buy something for $500,000 and the property rents for $500 a week, it's a 5% gross yield. So it's rent per week times by 52 weeks in the year divided by your purchase price. You can then do the same exercise down the track and say, well, now my value is $800,000. My rent is $700 a week. We can divide that. It's going to actually be a less yield because the value has skipped ahead of the rental income. You could also do a third option, which is existing rent income divided by your purchase price way back when, right? So we're going in, we're buying with a 5% yield. We then look back and say, right, in 5 years' time, my property's worth $800, but I only paid $500 for it, but I'm getting $700. Now my rental yield's like 8%. But now if I was to purchase that property, the actual yield would only be 4% because I've had outstanding growth.
Interesting you say those numbers. I just, while you're speaking then, loosely crunched one of my properties. At the current market value now and the rent that it's getting, it's a 3.8% gross yield.
Yes.
Okay, so that's before depreciation, tax add backs and all that stuff, right? So,
and when you bought it?
And then current rent now versus the purchase price, 6.76%.
There you go.
Yep. Now, if I did current rent divided by outstanding mortgage, which is a bit frivolous, it'd be a lot more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but when you bought the property, what was the yield?
Let's have a look. I'll just quickly work that out. Times 52 divided by 400. It was 5.5%.
5.5%. Okay.
Yield. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and those that are really loyal long-term listeners, thank you. You may have heard me speak of this prior to say when I first started my portfolio back at 21, my goal was to have my portfolio at a 6% gross yield, which meant in those days, the good old days, interest rates were probably about the same as they were now, but a 6% gross yield pretty much means that their property's income is wiping its own face. So it's covering most, if not all, the running costs, interest only, doesn't pay down the principal, of course, but it covers the running costs. And if you can get your property portfolio to that stage, it means that you don't have to work to prop the portfolio up. It's working on its own while you go and do your own thing.
So based on my little thing, and I mean, yeah, like you said to Kayla, there's no real answer. You can work out both just for information, but there's no way under the sun I would ever need to or want to sell this property.
Well, there's no downside to keeping it, really.
No, that's right. Like it, the mortgage is bugger all, as you say, quote unquote, wipes its own face, sits there. I'm doing P&I on it. I don't love to get into the weeds of net yield. I don't think it's matters. But just on that, with your investing, if you had an ETF in ordinary money, which is your own name, and you had a look at the last 12 months return, that return is going to be after fees. So after the MER.
So net.
Yeah. There might be examples, and if you want the gross, you just add the MER to it, or like 0.05 if it's an A200 index fund, and that would be like the gross return.
Yeah.
Now, with your superannuation, when you look at superannuation returns, It's after fees and taxes.
Right, so it's taken out
the 15% super rate and CGT throughout the year. So that's why apples ain't apples or bananas or whatever the saying is with comparing fruit.
Yeah, and you can make anything look good, can't you?
You really can. And that's the thing. Like, I love Kayla is asking this. When calculating, is it an annual rental income or purchase price or current value, we'll just do both and have a look at it.
Yeah. If you've got an existing property, like, it's great to look back and say, well, what was it, what is it now, et cetera. But the gross yield for most people that I'll deal with is about what is it before I purchase it. Because once I've purchased, it's essentially too late. You can't just say, well, no, I'm charging $600 a week even though the market rate's only $450. Yeah, it just won't happen. So, yeah, Kayla, good fodder, that's for sure.
What do you think is a reasonable yield for an investment property? Gross.
Yeah, so gross yield at the minute, I would say, and very different between units and houses, right, because we're paying more for the land component. And the larger the land size, the lower the gross yield because you're paying more for more land. Most parts of Australia, okay, let's just split them up for a minute. Melbourne and Sydney, houses less than 3% generally, which is pretty low. There's some real holding costs there when we look at those sort of percentages. If we look at units there, we might get to 4%, right? Maybe worst case 5. Now, when I say worst case, what you're buying there is probably a one better. Mm. Around the country, it's still achievable to get 5% gross yields. You can go and get 6, 7, 8% yields, but they're generally going to be cheaper properties in smaller locations.
Mm. So, but the higher the yield, the more risk, as a general rule?
Well, yes and no. It's a balance, right? Because and this is what makes property really interesting and probably keeps me relevant, is it's never a one-size-fits-all, because if you're using cash versus equity as deposits, then your holding costs are completely different. Mm. But do I use cash that's sitting in my offset account on my mortgage to prop up an investment property that's tax deductible? Mm. That's the question we've got to ask. But if we go and get ourselves a 10% yield, absolutely, there may be some volatility in the asset class we've got in a particular location. So in answer to your long-winded answer here, is probably anywhere between 4 to 5% is quite normal at the minute. But if we're down around 3%, usually we've got a really blue chip property that will perform consistently over the journey, but will come with some major holding costs.
Well, there you are. So great question. Thanks for asking. We take a lot of these questions from our Facebook group. If you want to become a member of our Facebook group, just search This Is Money on Facebook and apply to join the group. We screen everything. We'll be back right after this.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click Get Help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Rightio, we are back and we're doing the community segment of the week. Now, we asked you in the Facebook group, This Is Money, what inspired you to choose your current career path and how has it evolved over time? I'll start. Eliza said, the birth of my son, who unfortunately was born silently into this world. That day I said, screw it, I'm actually going to pursue my nursing. I was on maternity leave, grieving and applied. Aged care is my passion. I've had a few different nursing positions, and community nursing with the aged population is where my heart lies, particularly dementia. So there you go, like lots of reactions to that one. So good on you, Eliza. John's pulling up the sheet, so I'll just keep reading. Maddie said, hunger mostly. I like snacks. Snacks cost money. Now I earn good money to eat good snacks. I'd say it's progressing nicely. Yeah, a few reactions there. Shane, a previous supervisor poached me to a role. Now I love working in IT in schools for 10 years and counting, mostly because I think we get to play with lots of toys. For educational purposes, I need a drone. Ash said, my sister passed away at a young age due to being a drug addict. Oh my goodness. It made me want to be in a role that actively helped people. So I did a diploma of community services. I started out in disability, now working in family violence. I've done many different roles before getting into the community services sector, retail, admin, mining, delivery, call center, and more. And John, there's a common theme with all people that have been successful with their career. And I think successful means I don't hate my life when I wake up of a morning.
It's judged in different ways, isn't it? But generally speaking, if you're enjoying most days, that's considered success, isn't it?
And then there's this underlying thing of passion.
Yeah.
I actually like doing this. It's a passion.
Yeah, it's not a chore.
No. Emily said, and John hasn't got his thing up, so I'll just keep reading them. Emily, I've chosen every career choice on a whim. Interesting. I did med imaging for a year and didn't love it, so I switched to chem. Then my units lined up with nanotechnology, so I switched to that. I had to pick one at honours, physics or chem, so I chose chem. I decided to do a PhD because, you know, why not? Well, same. Went to industry for a bit, back to academia because I was bored, into research infrastructure because I could be around more microscopes, now in supercomputing because why not? So that's an interesting one there, like clearly a very switched on person, and I think it is weaving through that curiosity. I need to be stimulated, which is in that part of the passion.
And I think more people are likely to jump ship and go to a different career now than they were even when I went through 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like it's just wasn't the done thing. And it was, and a lot of people make decisions, well, back then based on loyalty. I'm loyal to my bank. I'm loyal to my boss. I'm loyal to my family. Like to jump ship was seen to be, disloyal.
Yeah, and there's no one in this world that is going to care about your career more than the person in your mirror.
That's right.
And that's why we wrote the career book, Sort Your Career Out, because it is the next big thing. I did a quote the other day for a piece of media. It's like, you might not own a property, but you own a career.
Yes.
And you need to attend to it. It is your biggest asset. Jade said, I was tired of sitting at a desk all day and wanted to run into flaming buildings instead. That's cool. Firefighters, shout out. Jade, Jade Luna, I've seen you in the Facebook group many, many times. You're a regular contributor. I want to interview you about your money story.
Oh.
I'm going to start to do some more of these myself this year now that I'm a bit more recharged. And at the end of last year, I was having a bit of a break down. And, you know, Sarah stepped in and helped out a bit. So there you go, the community segment of the week. And just a couple of housekeeping things. John's book, Sort Your Property Out. You can buy it today. Please, if you call this podcast home and you want to get some information, get some resources behind you, this is your book. If you want a gift for birthdays, Christmas, all that, Easter, do you do Easter gifts? I don't know. But this book, Sort Your Property Out, will change your life if you will let it, if you read it, if you buy it. There's an audiobook coming as well. It's going to be on Kindle. You can go to sortyourpropertyout.com. If you've got no interest in property and you call this podcast home, it's your annual membership fee. You get it for under $30. We thank you for your support.
Use it to level the table or something.
Yeah, monitor stands. Buy two. Book club. We're doing our book club this year. It's not really formal, but we're just mentioning a book each month. February is Thanks for the Feedback by Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen. At the end of each month, we'll put in the Facebook group, This Is Money, a post, and we can discuss and you can let everyone know what you thought of the book, what you learned, and I might do a bonus episode at the end of each month and just read everyone's comments. So we'll leave it there. Lastly, I forgot to mention, you may have heard it in an ad, but we are hitting the road. John and I are going to Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth. Sorry, Canberra, Hobart, Darwin. We can't get there, but we're doing book launch events. We're not recording podcasts at these events. They're just a live couple of hours. John's going to be presenting on property. He'll touch on anything you want. There'll be mortgage brokers at each event. And I just want to thank Sphere Home Loans and Sky Wealth, partners of this podcast, for partnering with us for these events. So we'll bump out of the community segment of the week and we'll get back into it. Joshua said, and I really want to camp on this and read a couple of people's responses, and I might get you to read a couple of people's responses, John, and then we'll chat about this. But Josh said, I'm sure it's been covered, but can someone point me to an episode that covers the potential doom and gloom one might have about probably never being able to get a house? Kids stopping you from restudying, being a bit older and mentally dealing with the time you've wasted and the crisis in your mind once realised. Mathematically, it just seems so beyond many people. I'm sure it would have been covered. Thanks. Well, we have talked about, you know, I feel behind and all that, but do you want to just read Mutiara's comment?
Well, I'm an immigrant, came to Australia 6 years ago with only 5K, then started working. Used up all the money I earned to pay for my study, then worked a few months after my study finished, saved money only to lose it all during COVID, got no support from government because I wasn't entitled to anything with my visa. So pretty much I went back to zero and literally only had zero 3 years ago. But fast forward now, I'm about to buy my first house, have investments and emergency saving. Something that seemed impossible for me to see 6 years ago or 3 years ago. Could never imagine having what I have. I was also scared realizing being 30 with nothing back then. But don't ever lose hope and don't stop climbing, because you can be whatever you want to be and you can get whatever you want to have only if you believe in yourself and never stop giving your best shot. Age is just a number. You can go as far as your mind lets you. Amen. I mean, that's the discussion point right there, isn't it? It's like, okay, we might have nothing now, regardless of what's in the rear vision mirror. I'm looking forward and I'm just taking one step at a time, one day at a time. This person went to do some study, got into debt, or basically went back to zero through no fault of their own, and fast forward, has a property, emergency fund, and can see the light. So a lot of that, and you can see in the writing, is the attitude and the approach, isn't it?
Yeah, and Amy said, if it helps, I'm 44 and only just now about to buy my first home. It feels like a dream I've been chasing for literally years, where the goalpost keeps on moving, aka house prices going up, so that it was constantly just out of reach. I had to move to another state to pick up a better income and make it happen. It's tough and disheartening, but not impossible, and you'll get there. I probably only started to really get my finances in order, though, when I was about 36 and only started investing a couple of years ago. So I think what I just wanted to pause on, Josh, was I want you to have hope for the future. Now, I don't know what your mental health is like. You've said it's, you know, been hard when you're kind of realizing and it's been weighing on your mind. But the first thing I want you to do is to make sure that you're actually mentally strong and healthy.
Yep.
And that's going to solve, not going to solve all your problems, because, you know, I take medication for mental health and have had my own struggles, but just getting the mental health under control can help you face some of the toughest things in your life, whether it is saving up. Now, the question is, kids stopping you from restudying, that's not going to be forever. And you've said that, you know, you're a little bit older. I think you said that. Yeah, I'm being a bit older. So what I would say is, it's okay, we're here now. We can't change the past, but we can have hope for the future and we can put a plan in place. Just some practical things. If you've got consumer debt, you got to focus on getting that sorted. Have you got a budget and a spending plan? You've got to get these structural things sorted. Even Amy said that, I was 36 when I decided to get my act together. I mean, I've got a friend who's just turned 41 and just bought their first home. So this is also a problem with Australia and the debacle that the housing market is. And honestly, books like John's book, Sort Your Property Out, will help you navigate this. It's not going to get any easier in the short term, but we can put a plan in place. And then you know, further study, I don't – this is an interesting one, John. There are a lot of well-paid jobs in different industries, and we'll carve out academia, we'll carve out medicine and all that stuff and being a vet and all that. But there are a lot of jobs that pay well that just require a bit of life and practical experience.
No formals, yeah.
So I wouldn't stress too much about this whole re-studying.
I agree.
Josh, to, you know, buy a copy of the career book, sort your career out. I want you to go back to base camp. What are your values? What do you like doing? I honestly think you could probably move the needle in your life without having to recommit to study.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the way the world rolls now, customer service is an underrated skill to have. Like, Josh, you great personality. Can you upskill in that space, right? And just get out there and put yourself forward. But I think that the key for me is, first of all, it may have taken courage for him to write this. Like, it's fantastic that he's put this forward to the group, because he's reaching out for advice and help. So that's awesome. Being a bit older, I don't know how older he is, but don't feel as though you've lost time, because you've decided to do what you've done when you did it, right? And don't think that time is the barrier here. Think of it as a positive to say, right, now the next 10 years, this is what I'm focusing on. And it may, I may be wrong, but you may be looking too far in advance. You may be thinking, oh, I'm going to have $1 million mortgage, it's going to take me 30 years to pay it off, and then I'll be 85, right? We can't think that far ahead, because it'll stress us out and it'll prevent us from making the short steps right now. So just think the next year, the next day, the next month.
Yeah, and life, it's not a fixed photo. It's a motion picture. Like, remember the old reels?
Yes.
And it's like the old – when you used to go to the movies a million years ago, you'd hear the projector at the back and it'd have the film. So that film was just thousands of still images. So life is a whole heap of moving images. It's not the one position. And that's why I really wanted to camp on here. Anyone who's feeling disheartened – anyone that's feeling behind, yes, it's tough. Is it easy? No. But just start to put some steps in place to move slowly towards what you want. And my first thing to Josh is get that re-studying out of your mind, because I reckon you're a little bit older. You've got life experience. I reckon there's something in your career or field or something that you might be able to do without studying, different career, maybe get an extra 10, 15 grand a year, and within 3 or 4 years, that's a house deposit. Lots of government schemes, you know, rewind a few weeks ago and listen to the How to Buy a Property in 2024. There is government schemes with 5% deposit. It's not easy, but it's worth it. But you just need to, you know, come on, you can get up. You can do it. We're here, and this is why we do this podcast. We are encouraging you that there is a tomorrow, and it's not easy, but it's worth it to get up and keep fighting.
You're right about the mental health piece. That's extremely important in these sort of situations, because that episode can bring us down, right down, and to the point of no return in some cases. But you mentioned falling behind or feeling as though I'm behind, right? We've got to ask ourselves, compared to what? Right. Are we comparing ourselves to a Facebook group? Are we comparing ourselves to our friends or our family, or do we feel a failure because of everyone around us that's perceivably done better than us? Right. We've got to get that out of our mind, right? If we are comparing ourselves to someone in a developing country, we are absolutely miles ahead in a lot of ways. So we've just got to make sure we've got a positive mindset and we're telling ourselves a good story.
Yeah, absolutely. We might just finish on a question, or it was more of a comment from Lucy. It was a bit of, I don't know, I just thought it was interesting. I wanted to talk about it. Can someone help me understand? When I was younger, getting a school lunch order was a big thing, but now I can buy food for lunch whenever I choose. Getting a chocolate bar was a special treat. Now it's picking up whatever chocolate treat I feel like each day. Takeaway was once a week on a Friday, but now whenever we say we don't have food in the fridge or too tired, we just go and buy stuff. Why is there not the same control around money there was when I was younger? I always remember an example my friend said to me that her family of five kids would be given a packet of Tim Tams to share, so they would get one each. I thought I was lucky as my mum was able to buy us a whole pack each. I understand there are differences in household incomes, choices of how financials are spent, etc. But my question, I wonder why has control of our consumerism have changed and become more lax than the past? Curious to hear, what do you think? What's your, like, I've got a very instant response to that. What's yours?
Yeah, look, and we, Amy and I, my wife, we discuss this all the time. Like, our kids are a product of our environment, and we are what we are in 2024. We've got everything at our fingertips. Lucy's 100% right, and we have the same frustrations, but we can't run our life on what we did growing up as kids because, yeah, we had school lunch maybe once a week, once a month, if we were lucky, a lunch order, right? Now it's at our fingertips with Uber Eats and all this other stuff there. It's a product of where we're living right now. We've got everything. Marketing is just at all-time highs, just in our face. Everywhere we look with laptops and phones and our friends have maybe got things that are better and greater than us. So now there's this FOMO and it's just a continual reel, and we've got to, fortunately, whichever way you look at it, you've got to embrace it and just create your own version that you're comfortable with.
When I was, you know, under 10 years old, as my dad likes to remind me, you know, mum and dad, low income, you know, non-qualified roles with a mortgage and interest rates of 17%. So there was this structural fact that wages weren't great, and they're still not great, relatively speaking, but interest rates at 17% relative to your earnings.
On a 100,000 mortgage.
On a 100,000 mortgage, like, it adds up.
Yeah.
Like, if you're on 25 grand a year and you had a 100 grand mortgage, you know, wow, there's no money. So I think that's a big thing. I would also say from a societal level in Australia, from the 2000s, late 90s, we had the big mining boom, we've had China boom. Our economy is just strapped onto the growth in China over the last 20, 30 years. So that's kind of been happening, but also layered with, you know, Australia is heavily influenced by American culture.
Yes.
But the background with our law is British and our political system is British, culture, American, right? When I first went to America in 2004, I was amazed. We went out for dinner. It was like a school night in America. We went to TGIF or somewhere like that. There was all these families out having dinner on a school night. I'm like, what the hell? Why do most people go out a few nights a week?
Yeah.
Like, so it was just this cultural thing. We just go out all the time.
Yeah.
And I think with what you talked about, like the internet, American consumer culture, welcome to capitalism, baby, convenience, it's all good, pew, 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 America. There's just many layers of why we are more lazy.
Yeah.
Because the money's there. And, you know, the last time, well, I've talked about it before, the last time I used Uber Eats was last year at TAFE when I got a sub delivered and it was $32. Like, it's not happening ever again. I'm just not doing it.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have a lot of money that they waste on crap.
Yeah.
And they whinge that they can't buy a house. Like, compared to Josh, who's like, oh, what am I going to do? If you're frigging Uber Eatsing and eating out every second night in cafes, it's going to be more than $120 a week or more.
Yeah.
Any wonder you can't afford a house. And I know it's not changing the problems. If house prices were 200 grand or 300 grand less, it's still a problem. But what measures have you put into place to really control your personal budget and spending? I don't buy the whole don't eat avocado, you know, buy a house. But when you're spending hundreds of dollars a week on going out, if you want to save money, cook at home. Trust me.
Or eat less.
Or eat less.
That Facebook group with the how much we spend on groceries per week, wow, there's some cheap eating there.
I need to interview some of those people.
I know.
I'm just like, how do you spend $200 a week with four people?
Family of four with a dog. Going back to the American thing, we were traveling back from Victoria over Christmas, saw a service station, and my 10-year-old pipes up and said, Dad, we need gas. And I said, excuse me?
Wow. YouTube.
Hasn't come from mum and dad.
Nope.
There's no gas there. It's just online.
It's thick and fast. Yeah. Yep.
And they are having more influence on our kids than we are. Yep. And that's what we've got to be careful of.
Mm. That's fascinating, isn't it?
Mm.
Mm, well, we might leave it there. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today on This Is Money. We're going to have a great year, lots of stuff. Make sure you buy tickets to our events all around Australia. It's just a couple of hours. Have some drinks, hang out with us. We'll say hi.
Can't wait.
John will talk about anything you want. My name's Glenn James. You are?
John Pigeon.
And this is Money.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. If you are interested in furthering your education around money, your career or property, we have three books that might help. Check out Sort Your Money Out, Sort Your Career Out and Sort Your Property Out. Find these wherever good books are sold or via the link in the podcast show notes. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.